Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas, along with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. And we had a very short week before Denver, though some time, I won't say off, it was just a length of time that was, the players did get some time away. What was your biggest focus for you, your staff, your administration, post-Denver to kind of where we are?
Well, look, I think, you know, we're reeling from a couple of things. The loss is number one, the results over the last 5 weeks. But I think, look, this avalanche of injuries we've had, you know, all sorts of different types of injuries and different circumstances. And look, we've got to look closely at the reasons behind those injuries and why is the volume so high for us. Look, everyone has injuries. Every team has injuries and things that they go through, but I think the volume and the position specific nature of a lot of these injuries is what's disturbing, and we've got to we got to find ways to avoid that circumstance and avoid that situation. And so we're looking at everything.
And yesterday looked at, and I don't know, I always don't know if he was officially signed, but certainly the story is out, brought in Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I think Dennis had mentioned, what was the team's interest back in 2022 when you were initially looking at him?
Yeah, we look at a lot of players, and that's a guy that we had, good grades on coming out of college. We followed his career, and there's things that we like about him. It probably hasn't gone as well as he would have liked, but look, he's talented. He's got speed. He's got some size. He's got, he's got a lot of traits that we like, and we'll get him in here and we'll see what we got, and hopefully he can help the cause.
And that's kind of the beauty of it, if you will, that he was playing, right? He was playing with Buffalo on October 14th before he was released. This is not a guy that's been sitting on the couch. It's a matter of acclimation to your scheme and your offense, but he's football ready, football shape. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And look, he had time in Green Bay in a similar scheme. And I think the learning curve will be shorter than it would be for, guys that aren't familiar with this offense.
And you talked about it, and it's everybody, nobody's immune to it, right? Kansas City, San Francisco, Tampa. It's really the positions when you get hit with three or four injuries at the position. But we're just reminded every night the brutality and the violence of this game. And it's almost luck. I mean, you look at Tampa, that game, and Mike Evans, Curtis, Chris Godwin, Brandon Ayuk. I mean, the list goes on and on. And the question is just, it's a reminder that it is a very violent game, and you got to be lucky to escape kind of as a team that doesn't get hurt a lot.
Yeah, I think when you look at the end of each season and you see the teams that are in the playoffs and doing well in the playoffs, more often than not, they're teams that, minimized or had a minimum amount of missed time from injuries, particularly, look, all injuries are not equal in the sense that, if you have one of your starting players, one of your best players get hurt, that's different than having, a rookie undrafted free agent. Now, it's not different for the player. I'm not suggesting that it is, but it's just different in terms of the impact on your team. And look, part of the unfortunate circumstances for us is that we've had a lot of starters, a lot of contributing players, really good players have missed time. And the good news is, look, a lot of those guys will be back during the course of this season. And so we've got to find ways to be competitive and win games while we're waiting for those reinforcements to get back.
No, I think we saw that in the Denver game, not so much with you guys, but so Denver had a couple of practice squad elevations, and I think they had three guys that they were able to pull back to their active roster from IR. So, it can come in waves, and without specificity, because Dennis talked about it last night, it's just that the ability that you might be able to get some of that interior offensive line help back.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys, those three starters, all have had injuries that have missed time, missed significant time. But we're expecting all three of those guys to be playing for us again this season.
Yes, the Saints getting to know SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, pretty well, as this will be the team's third trip to the new stadium in just 2 years. Last year, the Saints played a December Thursday night game against the Rams, and earlier in 2023, the Saints and the Chargers played a preseason game at SoFi after practicing together for a couple of days in Costa Mesa. It was a very memorable preseason game back on August 20th, at least in Southern California, as they endured a rare tropical storm and a small earthquake before the game. So yes, the third trip to SoFi in just 2 years, and both teams coming in after a loss, the Chargers losing last night, Monday Night Football, to Arizona, 17-15, to fall to 3-3. We'll have more with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis after this, as the Saints Hour rolls on here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking to the Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis here on the Saints Hour, and it has been a weird television schedule this year in that we have been able to watch your opponent on Monday, on the Sunday before. We had Philly in Atlanta, and Atlanta in Kansas City, then Kansas City and Tampa, and then last night you had the Tampa was on one at one time, and the Chargers as well. John Harbaugh teams are John Harbaugh teams. You don't have to have a big book on that. You know the John Harbaugh, I mean the Jim Harbaugh script and the kind of game that he wants to run.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, the he likes to play a physical brand of football. You know, he likes to run the ball and be physical on defense and physical on offense, and that's what you're going to get. I'd characterize it as old school football, but look, lots of people play that way, and lots of teams play that way in our league. So, we're going to have our hands full next Sunday. They're on the short week this time, and we're on the longer week, which will be a little different from the last few games. But we're looking forward to going to LA and the opportunity.
And really, as Dennis has said, and probably you as well, that until you are able to stop a team's run attack, whether it's better tackling or just better scheme, whatever, you know, the stuff that you've been working on this past week, you're gonna face it until you stop it.
Yeah, look, that goes back a lot of decades. If you can run the ball and you can stop the run, then you're going to be competitive and you're going to have a chance to win most games. And so we've got to get to that point again. You know, look, we started out this season when we were fully healthy and we were able to run the ball really well, and we were able to stop the run on defense and then allow our pass rushers and our back end talent, exploit teams trying to be one dimensional. And so we've got to get back to that. Hopefully we can start this weekend and build from that.
And football's football. And we were reminded again last night in the Arizona LA game, in that you can dominate and you can do a lot of things, but if you can't get into the end zone, sometimes you don't want to trade field goals and touchdowns, right? You just don't want to do it. It's a tale that does not usually end well.
Yeah, look, you know, football has become a game of, and I think it's been a game this way for a long time. It's turnovers and situational football, right? Red zone defense, third down defense, and offense. And turnovers and takeaways. That's what often most of the end results of these games can be dictated by who won those specific battles, as opposed to who had the most yards or the most, rushes or the most, receptions. It comes down to, hey, how'd you do in the red zone offensively or defensively? Did you take it away and did you not turn it over? And then, how'd you do on third down? Because, if you do well on third down, then you'll end up winning the time of possession. You'll have the ball. When you have the ball, it's hard for the other team to score.
And I know that there's just one focus. Please understand that as I ask this question, and that focus is to get back on the winning track, to really just one focus of go to Los Angeles, beat the Chargers, just do that. But as you watch other things and you watch Seattle go on the road and beat Atlanta and Baltimore go on the road and beat Tampa, that makes them both 4-3. It does not stop your main focus, but it also, in the big picture of the 30,000 foot, is that you don't let the rest of those NFC South teams kind of skirting away when maybe you're not playing your best football.
Yeah, a couple of things there. I think, first of all, you don't want to look ahead. You don't want to think about the enormity of whatever task you have in front of you. You want to focus on, hey, let's find a way to get a win this week. And then we'll look at next week. But on the other hand, when you look at the schedule and you look at the teams in our league, you know, I know this. I think our entire team feels like there's not anybody on our schedule that we can't beat if we're playing good football. And we know we can play good football. And look, we are going to have to rely in some cases on players that are stepping up and filling in for other guys that are injured. And so I think we can do that.
Final question. And we're talking to Foster Morrow a little bit later and Chuck Finley. In a weird way, did how you played and the success and the domination of weeks 1 and 2 and the film that got put out there, did that impact weeks 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? I mean, if you'd have won 15-14 in week 1 and 21-18 in week 2, you know, you'd still be 2-0, but I don't know.
Well, I think, look, it raised everyone's expectation level, because if you remember, the expectations for our team was pretty low outside our building. And yet I think inside we kind of felt like, hey, this is what we can be. We can be a really good football team. And I think, you know, weeks 1 and weeks 2, and even, look, I thought we went toe to toe with Philadelphia, and they're a really good team, physical team, big. We went toe to toe, had an opportunity to win that game. We go to Atlanta and they didn't score an offensive touchdown. They got 14 points on special teams miscue and then an interception for a touchdown. And so, and we still had the opportunity to win the game at the end. And look, the unfortunate thing is we didn't close those two games out and we had the opportunity. So I think through the first 4 weeks, there was a lot of good football, a lot of good signs for us. And then, you know, starting in week 3 and week 4, we start getting these injuries and then, you know, a trickle becomes an avalanche. And look, we've got to find a way to, you know, fight through that adversity and find a way to win a game to start. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
Well, that begins Sunday in Los Angeles, SoFi Stadium, a stadium you guys have played actually quite a bit the last few years. And so best of luck. Get that one and then build on it. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mike.
When we come back, we will hear from Saints tight end Foster Morrow. This is the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back, everyone, to the Saints Hour. Mike Hoss joined now by Saints tight end Foster Morrow. A nice little treat to have here on this Tuesday. Foster, you had some time off, not the greatest situation, but you had some time off to heal, to kind of regroup. How did you spend your time?
Yeah, Mike, I definitely spent it healing. I spent it with a couple of family and friends. Trying to stay in the cold tubs and on the Normatec boots as much as I can.
All right. So what's Normatec boots?
All right. So it's like a flushing agent. You could put these. They look like these. Thigh high boots that you put on, and it's interesting technology. But basically, It flushes the blood in and out of your legs with air compression.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah,
it's a good deal.
It just kind of help create better circulation, right?
That's exactly right.
And I got the impression, because if they're so popular right now, and I'm just curious, these are the cold plunges. Now, football players have been doing cold plunges, ice baths for 50 years, but are you doing the cold plunges?
Yeah, the plunge is certainly gaining a lot of popularity across social media platforms. I've been plunging for a while, but the best thing to do in terms of recovery for athletics, I find is a contrast between the hot and cold tub. You'll find that in every Power Five facility and professional facility across most all sports. Just the wet area in terms of going hot to cold for 3 to 2 minute increments. That'll loosen you up, get you feeling pretty good. And there's plenty of science behind it, but I think it wakes me up in the morning. Natural caffeine.
Wow. It sounds painful to me, but you know, we're two different cats, right? So it is what it is, right?
Give me that. Well, pain is relative.
That's right. Give me the 6 cups of coffee. 2019, drafted by then Oakland, but out of Jesuit, and to play at LSU and to have this opportunity. And for the truth of the matter, even with 32 teams, a lot of guys do not get to come back and play in their hometown. And, you know, it's now obviously in your second year, and the newness has worn off, but it's still pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've been, you know, people say you make your own luck, obviously, but I've been pretty lucky across my entire life in terms of the opportunities that I've been given. You know, to win a state championship at Jesuit in my senior year, beat some pretty talented football players, teams, and coaches, to be awarded a scholarship on National Signing Day to go play for Les Miles, then Ed Ogeron afterwards. And then obviously to be drafted, to be selected, to be chosen is a pretty unique and special experience, obviously. And to come home and for Mickey and DA to have the faith in me to come home and be able to handle distractions in your hometown and still put out a pretty relatively good product in terms of performance. I've truly been blessed.
It feels like, and we talked to Coach Allen about this last night, that yourself and Juwan, I mean, you've had two targets, two catches in each of your last three games and one touchdown. I know you would like more, but it's almost been the impact of those plays, in that you've had a long of 32 and a long of 41 and a 7-yarder on the touchdown day. It feels like, and Juwan's been similar. Now, his targets have been more, but it just feels like the last three games, the tight ends have been more predominant in the scheme.
Yeah, you know, I can't really speak much to scheme, but I can speak to, you know, the type of leaders that we have in that room. Speaking for obviously Juwan Johnson and Taysom Hill, you know, we certainly miss Taysom and we need him back. I think he's a big part of our production, especially, you know, in the hidden yardage of the run game. But we love playing football and we love our role, however big, however small, and we're going to try to execute that to the best of our abilities. You know, we're a great 1-2 punch. And I love sharing reps with Juwan and Taysom every game day. Those guys bring a fire and they truly are spark plugs for our offense, no doubt.
So tough after the 2-0 start as to where things are, but I know, just because I've been around this team for decades and month in Irvine, these are soul searching days, but this team has a lot more football and fight left in it.
Yeah, Mike, you know, every team comes across adversity, right? And I think I heard this just a couple of weeks ago in one of our team meetings, but you know, adversity is not our enemy, right? It's our partner in growth. And I thought that was so wonderful. And we're right in the middle of the storm that is adversity. And thankfully we have great leadership, you know, both sides of the ball, DeMario Davis, Eric McCoy, Derek Carr, Tyrann Mathieu, just to name a few, who've weathered storms, right? And who understand that any storm you get through is not worth coming out without having everyone still on board. So we're trying to keep guys on board as best as possible. We're on a 5-game skid, and all we can do this week is go 1-0. same thing that starting the year 2-0 goes. The only thing starting the year 2-0 guarantees is that, well, you can't go 1-16, you know, you can only at least go 2-15. Same for being 2-5, you know, the only thing that guarantees is that, well, you can't be 13-4. That's the only thing it guarantees. Glass half full mentality at all times. Whether you're winning or losing, you have to trust your own process. And if your process isn't getting it done, then just start adding things, start adding things as fast as possible. And, see if you can't turn it around.
I want this to predominantly to be about, you know, football, but I just have a couple of quick questions, from a health standpoint. And how are you, how are things? And, you know, after the scare that you went through, that would be tough for anybody, but just initially, how are you?
Yeah. My health's awesome. You know, inside and out, thankfully. I did another CT scan, thankfully, with my, oncologist, Carter Davis. He works over there at the fifth floor of the Benson Cancer Center. He's a good man and a great doctor. But he set me up with another CT scan just this past off season, like say around June, July. And I'm very clean and cancer free. So I'm extremely grateful.
Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. When we come back here on the Saints Hour, we will have more with Saints tight end Foster Morrow and his deepened friendship with Saints team doctor, Dr. John Amos. And we'll also take a listen back to the touchdown that was back in week 2 in Dallas. Foster Morrow, by the way, the last time he went up against the LA Chargers, that was back in 2022, when he was a member of the Las Vegas Raiders. He caught a 32-yarder in that one, and it ended up being a 7-point victory for Las Vegas. You are listening to the Saints Hour here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking with Saints tight end Foster Morrow, Jesuit Blue Jay, LSU Tiger. And you talked about your own doctor, but I was just curious because I spend time around him. We're near each other on the plane. I know his family, his brother, daughters and nieces. Your relationship with Dr. Amos, I mean, it just must be, it's got to be a little different, right? I mean, he's a super nice guy to begin with, but it's got to be a little different, huh?
Yeah, you know, John Amos is always going to be a special name in my life. Certainly, it's almost like he's uncompromising in terms of his dedication and his maybe really just his integrity. I mean, that day he really didn't have to care as much as he did. You know, he didn't have to go through. He could have given me a routine, a football physical examination. He could have checked my joints, you know, taken my temperature, gotten some blood work done, and made sure that I was healthy enough to play football. But just his process of going through the length of actually putting me through a real family style physical examination, when he didn't have to, you know, it was a Saturday morning. And he had other things to do. It was March Madness time. Like there was plenty of other things that he could have been doing on his off day, than coming in and working me out and putting me through a little physical examination. But just his detail probably saved my life, because I wouldn't have gone to get checked out if not for him. I mean, I'm worried about football. You know, I think if I could play football, I'm healthy and nothing else is going to happen to me, which is obviously a very blinded point of reference. But I'm thankful for John Amos every day, and I'm thankful I get to see him as I walk around the facility. He's a pretty special guy.
This time, Taysom is to the left, three receivers to left. Alvin is the deep back, and now Shaheed to the near side. Carr rolls it down. Now looks to the end zone. He's got Foster Morrow wide open. Foster prepares a flag.
Offensive lineman down the field on the Saints. That's leak. Offensive lineman got down the field. You got two flags on him. Offensive lineman, they were looking for somebody to block, and they were beyond 1 yard.
Eligible man downfield. Offense number 51. 5-yard penalty. First down.
Foster is upset. That's leak. is the play, the tight end Leak. He was wide open too. Wide open.
He just couldn't, the ball couldn't get there soon enough.
I told you at some point that they were going to come back to those tight ends. It's not the corner route. It's just Leak. And that's the play in the offensive line. They're looking for work.
Yeah, 15 career touchdowns, two this year. I don't know you well enough to ask this, but I'm still curious. Does the touchdown call back at Dallas still bother you?
No, it didn't. And it didn't bother me then. Honestly, I've never had one called back, so there was really no point of reference for me. It was pretty ticky tacky in terms of,
I agree,
in terms of how it was called. But I think five plays later, we still got AK into the end zone. I think it was his fourth of the day. I'm not sure, but, we got to run a little bit more time off the clock. And we still got in.
It was huge, only because of the way A&T Stadium is, we were at an angle. So I'm behind Carr. You're at the other end of the field. So I'm behind Carr, and the lane to you is so open. Like I talked about you being open before Carr cocked his arm. I mean, it was a well-designed play, and I've never had a view of that just because of the angle. It was unique. So I was just curious.
Yeah.
Now, probably covered you some in high school and in LSU, but spent a lot of time at Irvine. How do I say that? Have you always been that chirpy on the practice field?
I'll say it's relative to where my confidence is with where I'm playing. Maybe back in Vegas when I really started to get comfortable around that, rookie year. You're never comfortable. But after that, you go into the second year, and I was trying to figure through an ACL injury, and I wasn't too confident in myself, and I didn't feel like I was playing great. But kind of as the years went on, I got a little bit more confidence, and I was a little chirpy out there, but probably not to the degree that I was in Irvine this past year. Just, coming into a new place year five with the Saints, and, obviously, I've always had a lot of reverence. I've watched these guys for a long time through high school, college, and playing against them professionally. I always had a lot of reverence and admiration for the way they played football. So coming in year five, and I don't really know anybody. That was definitely difficult in terms of actually getting to be a little bit more vocal on the field. But I was given a call to action and decided that. We got a lot of leaders on the offense, but on the practice field, no one's really that much that vocal, I would say. And I decided that I was going to try to take up that mantra and see if we couldn't give the defense all they could handle for that month long period. And it was credit to us. It was a great training camp. And if the guys weren't practicing as well as they were and people weren't giving 100% effort and we weren't bought into the playbook and to the coaching staff and to our goals, then I wouldn't have been chirping as much. I wouldn't have had any platform to chirp. But we busted our ass and we kicked a lot of ass during training camp. Same for the defense. I think they got after us pretty good too.
No, it was a great camp. And, who knows, maybe going back to LAX and within an hour's drive of Irvine, maybe this is a good sign to get out of this. Best of luck, continued success with your health, continued success on the football field, and turn it around on Sunday and get one and then go from there.
I appreciate that, Mike. Thank you very much. I enjoyed being on.
And to be fair to Foster, we appreciate his time. We took a listen to the TD that wasn't, but so here is the TD that was in Kansas City, fourth quarter, that made that game a three-point football game.
Under center is Carr, deep back is Kamara. Snap, play action, looks, now he needs to get rid of it, throwing it for Foster Moreau, and that's a touchdown in the corner of the end zone. Doucette, the tight end's got to show up. The tight end did. Foster Morrow with the touchdown.
When we come back, we will speak to a Whodat for life. He visited with the team when they were in Irvine, California and training camp, and he will be there Sunday at SoFi Stadium. He is a five-time All-Star, a pitcher in the major league. He is a five-time All-Star and a former pitcher in the major leagues. He is Chuck Finley. We'll hear from him here on the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back, everyone, to the Saints Hour. Mike Hoss, along with a unique guest this last segment, Chuck Finley, a Whodat for life, former Major League Baseball pitcher for California, Anaheim, the Cleveland Indians, now Guardians, St. Louis Cardinals, but born up in Monroe, Louisiana. Chuck, how you doing, my friend? Good to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Mike. Good to be on. Yeah, I came out of the womb a Saints fan, and I'll go down being a Saints fan, good or bad. They're my team, and I'm always get excited when the season starts, and I love watching them. They're just fun people.
And so you are in Newport Beach, California, on the coast, and they were in Irvine, UCI, for literally a month. I was out there as well, and that must have been like a kid in a candy store moment for you to spend some time, because, I mean, that was football every day for 3 hours at its peak.
Yeah, Mickey Parrington, you guys know well around there, Doug, and got to meet Mickey Loomis also, and Derek and a bunch of the guys when they're out here. And yeah, I was like a kid in a candy store when I went out to UCI, the practice field, and got to walk around. I took some friends of mine with me, and I'm kind of a big guy myself, but I went out there and I went, wow, these guys are really big.
Yeah, to me, it's the size, but it's the speed. When you're standing on a practice field, and it's the speed, and I'm not talking about DBs. I'm talking about the linebackers, defensive linemen, those guys. The speed, to me, is what is so TV does not capture.
Yeah. I mean, we watch, you know, it's like when in baseball, people ask me this and that, and they go, well, the game I played didn't look that hard. And I go, well, if I took you and made you stand at third base and had a big right-handed hitter slap a ball down the line, you saw how fast it was coming to you, you would have a different perspective. But I totally do. Every time I go to an NFL game and I go down on the sidelines or college and see the difference, you just go, TV just doesn't justify the speed and the quickness that these guys have. Now, I understand. I was listening to your show before, and I've watched all the Saints games about the injuries, and you hate to see them, but you can kind of understand where they come from, obviously, because the game has gotten so fast and dynamic in all aspects of it.
And I think it's the hardest kind of aspect, and I'm not speaking for the team, but just all the soft tissue injuries, right? I mean, it's the hamstrings and the quads and the calves and the pecs and all these soft tissue injuries that you want to be able to avoid and do everything you can, but it just feels like they're mounting up for whatever reason.
Yeah, we have the same problem going on in baseball with our team and around the league. It's kind of like an epidemic going on with these Tommy John surgeries with the elbows. And, you know, it used to be all hamstrings with our outfielders and our base running guys like that, making turns and like your wide receivers have a lot of. But, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, it's been nothing but Tommy John's. And we've been trying to put our finger on what the cause is. And I don't know if it comes down to max velocity on every pitch or overthrowing or kids not taking time off to let their arms rest or travel ball or what, but it's definitely there and it shows up. I obviously you guys are seeing the beast of it, but we do too in our 162 game schedule. Man, we lose, you know, up to 15, 20 guys a season, just up and down. And it's hard to restart that engine when you lose your, you know, top two or three players.
15th round pick back in 1984. You in 2006, you went into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. 200 wins, 2,610 innings pitched. Which of those two facts? So 200 wins, which is, you know, that's rare air, or 2,600 innings pitched. What means more to you?
Oh, the innings by far. You know, that's the big gripe that we have this day about our pitchers, especially on our Angel team, about trying to pitch deep into games. It means so much more to your team when you can touch into the sixth or seventh or eighth inning on a nightly basis. It just saves your whole staff. But I would say the innings pitch was my biggest thing I loved doing, because I was known as the guy that you give me the ball and pretty much not going to get it back until maybe the eighth inning. So I took a lot of pride in conditioning and strength and just knowing how to pitch and work your way through a game.
Yeah, something I think that is a talent and an art. They were just a different game now. I mean, it's a pitcher for two innings, another pitcher for two, one for one. I mean, it's a different game, correct?
Oh yeah, well, you know, back when I was playing up until probably 20 years ago, 15 years ago, you know, you put all your money in your pitching, your five starters, and then you put the rest of your money in your setup guy and your closer. So the guys in between that were pretty much guys that weren't good enough to be a starter or barely to make the team. So that was kind of the makeup of the team. So you didn't really have those innings in between where you had the luxury of giving the ball to a guy that maybe wasn't quite as good enough, maybe not even good enough to play in the big leagues. But today's game, it's all set up for three innings, come in the fourth, you know, piece it together. And that's what you see, especially in the World Series. You see these guys that are, as soon as you hit trouble, bam, they're swapping parts out.
So you're a five-time All-Star. You started your college career at Louisiana Tech, but transferred to Northeast Louisiana. And correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't do a deep dive, but the kind of status report was that you couldn't pitch more than a few innings. You had kind of a crude delivery. And I'm wondering, how do you get from there to 200 wins and five-time All-Star?
I wonder that myself. I was a mediocre college pitcher. I did just enough in high school to get noticed by a few schools and went that path. And then I did just good. I had a couple of good games when the right scouts were in the stands. And a guy by the name of Lou Snip, who works the southern area down in Louisiana, Texas area, I pitched against Lamar one day and I had a great game. And he tried to sign me. And I ended up signing with the Angels. And tell you a really funny story, though. I didn't spend a lot of time in the minor leagues. I kind of jet-set it through the system. I think I only had like 40 innings. And when I came up to the big leagues, I went from Clinton, Iowa, pitching in front of 400 people, to 2 days later in Yankee Stadium. So I show up in Yankee Stadium, the clubhouse, knowing very few of the guys, and I'm sitting there and the phone rings. And I'm thinking, they say, Finley, phone call. And I'm thinking, who knows me? I'm here, one, then who could be calling me? Lo and behold, person on the other end was Ron Guidry, Louisiana Lightning.
Heck yeah.
Who I grew up watching my whole youth and teenage years, and called me and welcomed me to the big leagues. And I just hung the phone up and I went, wow. How do you get to this point? Probably a year and a half earlier, I was in school in Northeast. I mean, that's what's crazy about it, the journey of it all.
Well, I mean, I'm just a journey guy. I love the journey, especially, you know, again, 15th round pick in 84, there was nothing given. There was no guarantees. You remember what your signing bonus was or guaranteed at that point?
$3,500.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think monthly I was making $700 a month. I had seven guys living in one house, sleeping on the floors on these little blow up mats. And I was the happiest person I've ever been.
No, are you kidding me, man? No responsibility to play baseball, right? You didn't have mortgages and kids and colleges. And believe me, it's the simplicity of it.
Sad about the fact that, you know, we got all wrapped up in the results and this and that. But, you know, the journey is where it's all about. You think back on your career, even where you are today, you look back where you started, maybe on a college campus doing the radio or hosting, doing newspapers or this and that. And you go, the fun of it all was getting there. You know, that is the fun of it all.
No, you and I are almost identical from an age standpoint. So generationally, right. I mean, it's the journey. And most of those who didn't make it did it because they just quit. They didn't want to do the journey. They didn't want to pay, you know, back in, I'm going to talk like a get off my lawn guy. Back in our day, you had to work, but you worked hard. There was, you know, something at the end of the tunnel. And so, and I felt like, and I don't know if that's there anymore. I think it still is, but I don't think it's like it was when I grew up in the 60s, 70s and 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really miss opening the paper up and looking at the bot scores. Where did these things go? They just disappeared on me one day.
So I've been in New Orleans 30 plus years and worked at WWL TV and was a sports anchor. And I think when I got down here, you know, I was actually a basketball guy from the ACC, and they're like, football, this is a football town and nothing but football. And I quickly learned You know, I spent many summers in Omaha, the College World Series, and this state, and I'm talking beyond LSU, does not get the credit it deserves for the amount of baseball talent it produces.
Yeah, I from playing in the big leagues, and I keep a close eye on who's been around Louisiana and got bringing up like Lee Smith and, you know, the Will Clarks and guys like that that I play with. And I go, I didn't know you from Metairie. I didn't know you from Lake Charles. I didn't know you from Monroe, Ravel. And I'm like, wow, there's a lot of guys that are popping up. And still to this day, they produce a lot of great talent for being such a small state. I mean, obviously everybody looks at Texas, California, and Florida and goes, oh, of course. But, you know, like I tell people, you got to be from somewhere, you know, and it's, Louisiana is a great place.
Do you get back? You were born in Monroe, went to Northeast, which is now Louisiana Monroe. I mean, all the, every school's changed, but do you have family still in the area?
Yeah, I still have my sisters live up there and love all my friends that I went to school with and cousins, obviously. But I went back there last year for Lou Sanamont. They dedicated the stadium, put the name on Lou Sanamont Stadium there at Northeast for him. We had a big dinner for him. About 2,000 or 3,000 people showed up for that. But I try to get back once or twice a year. I used to take my kids back all the time when they were younger. But, you know, once your kids get older, you got to kind of put in an appointment 4 or 5 months out to get days.
Yes, I do understand that. What keeps your time? I've been to Newport. It's a gorgeous area. What is your time like these days?
Well, you know what, Mike, as soon as I retired, the Angels called me and they said, do you want to take some time off or you want to go to work for us? What do you want to do? And they said, pretty much you can do whatever you want. So actually I've been working for the team since 2003, the day I retired. And, I've been with their charity work, been doing on the field work. I was with the team last year for a month on the road, evaluating. You know, I help our owner out. I help our president. So they let me pretty much do whatever I need to do or want to do. And I just got back about a week ago from our instruction league with all of our 18 and 19 year old kids that we drafted the year before and our young low A guys. So I'll keep doing this until I figure out they're not listening anymore.
Well, you can take the boy out of baseball, right? But you can't take the baseball out of that young boy, right? It's just the way it is. It's part of your life. And so we'll finish up our old school segment because it's a perfect segue in that Yankees Dodgers, right? I mean, what? Yankees Dodgers? That's what is that? Bucky Dent? How far are we going back? So who do you like out of this? And what makes you want to watch this series?
Well, it's been a great series all the way up until this point. I mean, the games have been really, really good. You know, that's a network's dream right there to have the East Coast, West Coast and bring back. But I bet the ratings for this game will be the highest they've been in 30 years as far as the World Series goes. But, you know, these teams are so evenly matched. I think a lot of these games going to come down to the sixth or seventh inning, those waving innings when you get the starter out and you bring the relievers in. I think that's where a lot of the play is going to be made. But I find it kind of hard to beat Gerrit Cole twice. I mean, he's a dynamic pitcher, and you get him going on the bump to start off, and then you got him again 4 days later. He's a pretty tough cat, but, you know, you got Shohei, and you got Judge, and then you got the supporting cast. So it should be up for a really good TV series.
Looking forward to it. I assumed this. You'll be at SoFi Sunday, Saints and Chargers?
Check the boys. I'm going to bring a win. I'm going to bring a win home.
Sir, please do. Just take it right up to the press box and deliver it because it will be well needed. This has been a real thrill for me. I appreciate your time. I know the Saints do. Saints be back out in Los Angeles this weekend looking for a badly needed victory after their time in Irvine. So continued success.
As you well, too, Mike. Good to have me, and thank you for having me on the show, and tell everybody to who dat.
That's our show for tonight. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth, and we will talk to you after a trip to Los Angeles and SoFi. This is the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.